When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
あ、ここいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ？どこにいるのかな？ね、見えない。
What's good, internet? It is Monday, July 29th, 2019, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 252. I'm your host, Austin Walker. Joining me in the room in Brooklyn, Kato is here.
What's up?
How you doing?
I'm sleepy.
You're sleepy. Rob Zachney calling in from Massachusetts. How you doing, Rob? You doing good?
Also pretty sleepy. Another Alaska Airlines flight get in extremely late.
Put them on
and
blast.
And there's nothing like having lost hours to, like, having broken fucking airplanes than having the flight crew tell you they were just voted highest in customer satisfaction at the end of your last flight.
Great.
Amazing. Amazing.
Like, I'm sitting back there, it's like 1 in the morning, and I'm like, go fuck yourselves.
Well, you landed safely. You're back with us. I'm happy that you've arrived and survived. Patrick Klepek, are you sleepy also this morning?
No, man. I'm hyped. Okay. I'm ready. Trampolines respawn.
Okay, what?
You go through a pipe, trampoline comes back.
Mario Maker, he's
talking. Take that trampoline out, go use it, go back in that pipe. New trampoline. New trampoline. Infinite trampolines. All the trampolines you want.
Now, does the one outside stay?
Yeah.
Are you duping?
No, no.
Okay.
But if you carry one through a pipe,
Mario?
What if you carry one through a pipe?
Yeah, he could do that. That's what he's saying.
But like I'm saying, if you grab the one, you go through the pipe, you come back through the pipe. Is there a second trampoline?
It wouldn't help. You don't need to, in the room that spawns your trampolines.
But maybe
you
jump off the first one and then
there's nothing else in there. I saw the end of this stream.
So I'm talking hypothetically.
Yeah, yeah. No, you. Yeah, in a
hypothetical situation where maybe you
could dupe it in that.
You could dupe it. Jump off the first trampoline.
Once.
Right. Once. Yes. Just once. Not multiple times. You can't just fill a room with trampolines this way.
No.
That'd be cool.
Why is this important to you?
I guess Dan Reichert is making good levels now. This is not part of the narrative that I signed up for. It's leaving me confused. Although apparently I've heard there are rumors that something is being worked on. But in the meantime, when Mario Maker 2 came out, I played a handful of levels. Dan had made one of his first nightmares, and I looked at the world record, and the world record was like 3.5 minutes long, which is a really long time for a stage. The stage has less than 70 completions. I think its completion percentage is 0.15%. Not good. Basically, it means most people stared at the level and just said, no, thank you, which is reasonable. And then I finally... I was like, you know what? You know, part of my job, part of what I was put here for is to vanquish these stages, to show that we are not going to be bullied into not playing these stages. Not everyone needs to do this.
Right.
But that is my burden. That is my weight. And so I started on, this one called Trapped Under Ice this morning, in which if people haven't watched like me stream Mario Maker before, like sometimes it can be frustrating because my whole like procedure is to come up with a theory and then prove out that theory, even if it takes me 40 minutes to find out, boy, that didn't help anything at all, nor did it put us any closer to a victory condition. Because, like, the way I mentally deal with, like, frustrating levels in which, like, progress is short, fleeting, and especially with Dan's levels, often, like, a false, like, hope in which you'll solve something, but it was just a puzzle put there for you to realize there was nothing actually to solve except for you to get caught in a death box at the end of it. But I consider those, the way I, like, I'll have my downtime moments where it's like, oh, that's like I had one this morning right at the end of the stream. It was like, cool, let's see what's on the other side of this pipe. And then there's this little gauntlet. I figured out how the gauntlet works. I managed to get a power block in there so I could take out an enemy that was otherwise undefeatable. And then there's a pipe at the end of that room. You go in that pipe and it sends you into a room with spikes and there's nothing you can do. You literally solved something just to be told it was all a waste of your time, mm-hmm. Which is can be brutal.
Oh, but yeah.
The way I keep it on the up and up is that for me, that's okay. It's off the table. Like, that's right. Why I bang my head against, like, specific theories. Even though, because I'm doing my best to not look at chat where I can have theories disproved very quickly, I need chat to understand that I need to disprove it for myself. And even if some people can solve the answers for me. That said, chat very unreliable. I asked chat very specifically at one point, do stars respawn? This is one thing we were trying to figure out, was that Mario games handle memory differently. And what I mean by that is they handle what they keep in memory and for how long. And like whether the player determines it or whether the screen moving off determines it in different ways. Some objects respawn, some objects don't respawn. For example, there was a room in which I asked the chat, hey, so Mario Maker 2 has these blocks that switch. Like you hit an on-off switch and they move things. They turn these other blocks in the world on and off. Do those reset upon going through a pipe? And chat was like, absolutely. I was like, okay, that's frustrating. But that's
very
useful.
Definitive, yeah.
I was like, what about stars? Stars are an item. That probably like resets. That probably comes back in so you could use it again. They're like, yeah, absolutely. So I go in, go through the pipe, come back out. Completely wrong. Just flip those answers.
Wow.
The stars do not respond and the blocks do stay in place. So, I made it through a decent, I don't know, I made it through a decent chunk of the level, but I made more progress than I expected to, especially given that someone at the beginning of the stream said, this took me the better part of a week and I have lots of notes written down. Just a deflating way. And like, I read that in the first like couple of minutes, just like a deflating way to like, I was like, I know this is a mountain. And then someone was like, yeah, but what if that was like a mountain that was going to take you like 2 weeks, given at the pace you play these in the morning, and then you'll have to take notes. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So, and the last thing I did was trying to figure out, trying to theory craft what would be the next section. So rather than going in, like the level has a very specific timer that my understanding is you just kind of got to do it. And if you goof up along the way, like you're going to be in a bad situation by the end. So I'm not focused on the timer as much as like, I'm sometimes sequence skipping just so I can get to the next section to work out what it is, as opposed to worrying about stringing it all together. And the last bit that the last theory I had was like, okay, like the only way I can kind of muster together how you would get to this next section is if trampolines can be used twice, which means can I go down to a room, take a trampoline, take it out, use it for one purpose, then have to ditch that trampoline because I need to get on a Yoshi so I can survive these spikes.
Right.
Then can I ditch that Yoshi and go get another trampoline? And it turns out you can, which is a victory. It is a victory. So the trampolines respawn, which means I can get to the door on the right-hand side.
Congratulations.
I don't know what's on the other side of that door. The door may just be a spike room.
Wait, can you?
But you, what? Can yeah, you, you put it. You put a. You put a trampoline on top of the POW block. So you use the trampoline to get up, grab the POW block, drop the POW block.
If
do
you're
not throw
moving,
it.
Are you allowed to enter a door?
Oh yeah.
Well, so you don't. So you the way you time it is. So because if you're on a block, like just like a yellow block or like those little like those ones that fall. I don't know what the actual like terminology is for those.
Yeah, yeah.
You can just hold up and Mario will just immediately go through a door. On a trampoline, you need to time it. And so basically what you do is you drop the trampoline on top of the POW block and then you just have to like, you know,
time
make,
it.
Well,
when
actually, I guess
Mario's feet are so on the ground.
No, so now that I'm thinking about it, because you would actually probably put the POW block on top of the trampoline.
Right.
Then you could just ride the POW
block. That's what I
was going
to say. Right. You could hold up on the POW block, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I had a question. I only caught the end of your stream.
Uh-huh.
I was noticing something that I was like, wait, why isn't... So, you know that bit where you're getting on a POW block to jump and hit that yellow block to let the... Let the little bomb down.
The bomb, yeah.
Yeah. Can you just throw a shell at that block?
Kyle, you're not allowed to help.
Good.
This is the chat. You're not allowed to help. You're not allowed to help unless Patrick asks. That's the rule.
No, I was wondering if he had tried that and it, and whether or not that shell like detonates the bomber or nothing. And because I was like, wait, what is this other? Because that seems like an easier way to do this. But I assume
I think you're right.
I came in later, right, so I wasn't sure if he had tried it. I wanted to know if you had tried it.
My mod Hassoon would have temp blocked you for a minute for suggesting this. Because you're right. Because you can go in to the first, the first pipe where the star is,
right?
And as long as you're holding the shell when you grab the star, you could keep the shell. And then yes, you could actually skip.
Couldn't
that
you even
that
just like
the beginning.
Leave the star is in the block, right? In the like question mark.
Yeah, you could just leave. You could just leave the star
and come back.
But
see,
it wouldn't help you.
Do these streams alone.
But Kato, so like, so yes, it would. Well, Kato's, so part of what Kato is like, what I try to do is find efficiencies, which is like, what's the fastest way to do something repeatably so that you're not like dying to things over and over, so you can focus on the stuff that matters, like put your mental energy there. So that is an efficiency. That is true. And I will steal that and use it on Wednesday and publicly shame you for breaking protocol.
Good. Yeah. I wasn't sure. That's why I wanted to ask.
You actually have a 24-hour ban now from twitch.tv/PatrickKlepek. Thankfully, he's not streaming during that time, but you're banned right now.
No. You're lucky that I don't stream. I only stream every once every 48 hours. So your ban will expire by the time I stream again.
Perfect.
So,
yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
But it wouldn't necessarily solve, like, you can't use that star then to, like, get up through that spiky area on the left. Like, you still need Yoshi to, like, actually survive that gauntlet.
Yeah.
Because you need the fire Yoshi to set off the bombs.
Wait, why can't you get
so it does make an efficient
star?
There's not enough time.
Don't give him more time.
No, I'm explaining. He's not right. He's not right. Okay. He's not right. Because you need... You need Fire Yoshi in order for the bombs to be set off. Like, he needs to
set
because Fire Yoshi's fire goes through
blocks.
I was
talking about that other POW block.
Oh, my God. We can't.
Stop, Kato. You're cut off.
You're cut off. Oh, my God.
But you know what? Kato is more useful than Fire Emblem Three Houses is at explaining how the game works. So,
oh, definitely.
You know, that part's...
Oh.
What a game with a bad tutorial, let me tell you that. I'm glad I've played one of these before, because this game's not very good at explaining itself.
That's true,
like,
actually.
It's been really interesting for me seeing people be like, have that response, partially because it's like, so the number one thing I'm seeing is people being like, you should look things up. And I'm like, yes, absolutely. Please look things up. And then they're like, here's the wiki. And I'm like, wait, you could just look it up in the game. And then I remember, I didn't realize I could look it up in the game until hour 10. Ooh. But I played another 60 hours of that game. So the bulk of time, I knew how to look things up. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it has a really rough, like, cliff intro
that
you have to climb. And it's like, all right. But then the game is so long that it's like an MMO or something where you're putting so much time into it that you're forgetting how hard that initial entry is,
totally.
You know? And also, like you, Patrick, if you've played these, there's some core stuff that you just know, and that can carry you through four bits of it at least.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned this to you in a DM, was like, a couple hours into the game, you get dropped into the game starts. You know, you get out of like the game starts, and you can go and this is after you've like picked your house, which we should get into that part separately because that was an emotional journey that I did not enjoy.
Oh, I bet.
But once you've picked a house to align with, and you can kind of explore a bunch of the grounds and talk to everybody. Like, the way the game flags the minimap, it's like, look, conversation that's meaningful that, like, you should go and engage with. Like, okay, go and click that. Finish that conversation. The game says, recruit? I'm like, what? Excuse? Like, recruit?
Uh-huh.
I was like, did I miss something? And I was like, nope. No, I did not. At no point did this game stop and say, by the way, after you pick a house, you can recruit. And so I just
hit the button.
Recruit? And it said, you need... flying creatures won't come here until you do more.
Right.
And I'm like, what are you even talking about? What do you mean flying creatures? And I know that because I know there are Pegasus in this game series.
Yeah.
Because I've played it before, but that like
wyverns and shit.
That doesn't make any sense to like someone who is like, and I've told people like, this is a good one to jump into. And I still think that is true.
Yep.
But it is shocking to the degree that Recruit is a new mechanic. It's not even just, you've done this before. Like, you know how this works. Like, no, I mean,
this is true for the same shit with, like, I talked about, like, the red lines and that let you know that you're being targeted. There's never a tutorialization of that.
No.
I had a friend last night be like, you could hit the R2 button to see where the enemies are going to, or what their range is. And it's like, yeah, you can do that. And, like,
oh, the worst part of that is that it's turned on in the very first mission you do against the bandits. And then the next mission against the other houses, it's just off all of a sudden. I'm like, where are these shapes? I saw them last time.
I saw them before. Totally. Past games have also allowed you to turn that on all the time in by default in the menu. And you just, in the options, you just can't do that here. Like, I think there's a bunch of that stuff.
So it's, you have to manually turn it on.
You can hit R2 to turn on the big,
oh my God. I was looking
thing.
For in the menus.
Or you can go to an individual unit and hit A on them.
Right, right.
And that will give you just their thing, which is super useful once you get flying units, because like with flying, and you can do both, right? So you can have like the big purple ground
and
area.
And
you can also be like, all right, I need to know where all the archers are all the time, because my flyers will just get knocked out of the sky.
Oh, so you can tag them and leave them turned on.
Totally.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, gotcha. Totally. It's like one of those things where it's like, it gives you a bunch of options. It's just really not interested in telling you those things directly, which, you know, is like a flaw of mine that I just don't care that much about that most of the time. But yeah, I think like it could definitely be better around that stuff. The stuff that bugs me more is now that I'm hearing about the other routes, how distinct they are, is the stuff that Patrick, you were saying around choosing a house that like.
Wait, quick question before we talk about that, actually. Do you often find yourself
interested? Yeah, please ask me any questions about this, because people playing the game now probably have a million questions.
Right.
I'm in a
Austin,
weird place.
What is your vision? Because how do you read the text in this game when you play it in handheld mode? It's like,
it's
just in my 2020.
You
don't.
It's just in my
face. You don't read it.
I played a lot in bed. But I saved that for missions, not for hanging around.
A game that is made for handheld
mode. It's bad.
Anything that is made for this platform.
Made for? Really?
I think anything for this platform should be playable in handheld
mode. It should be. I just mean it doesn't feel like it.
No. That's his point.
Yeah.
His point is the text is so small. It's the smallest it's been since playing Dead, Dead Rising on the
Dead
Xbox 360, where if you didn't have an HDTV, you just literally couldn't read half of the text on the screen. It was the worst. That shit should all be bigger all the way. Or like, let me have an option for it.
I was just going to ask
bigger than before.
Bigger than before. Bigger than before.
Just need some vinegar.
Just dip your Switch in vinegar.
I just pour it on my Switch?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know what? Can someone please, with ability to make memes, Steve, just get out
Steve
there.
Steve Kim.
If you made a thing that was bigger than before, but for dipping a Switch in vinegar, and then the font size was bigger than Fire Emblem, that'd be big right now.
That'd be
huge. Just raining down.
Boom. Rack them up. Get that clout.
The question I had that was related to what you were saying before about how that didn't bother you is, do you often find yourself just going through menus just to see what's there?
I've never started a game without looking at the options menu.
Yeah.
The first thing I do is like, what's every button on this thing do?
Right.
Like, that is just who I am. And like, I think, Rob, maybe you know, we've talked about this here or there before, but like, coming from the lineage of having played strategy games, where every strategy game I play starts with a menu that has 13 options that I can't possibly really know how they will affect my play. You know, think about something like, we've streamed Stellaris, where like Stellaris opens up like, all right, what type of galaxy do you want? Elliptical, spiral? What sort of shit do you want here? How many sleeping factions do you want or whatever? It's like, I don't know. And so like, I get a lot of joy out of feeling out that space inside of a gameplay system and like figuring out. And that's not to say I'm never frustrated by stuff. I often am, but it's especially when I feel deeply punished and that like my time has been wasted. But to do that, the part of the reason why I don't feel that so bad is because of things like the Divine Pulse, where I didn't replay a single mission in this game. Do you know what I mean? If I was doing that, and I could see other people having that issue. So, but for that reason, it never got under my skin here. Rob.
Yeah, I think where things get really blurry is that there are no genre conventions for like strategy games and tactics games in particular that like bridge the gap into like more like popular tactics games as opposed to more like niche wargamey type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The strategy stuff you're talking about, there is kind of an expectation that there is a lot of experimentation and open-ended learning you're going to have to do. The toolbox is opened for you, but you don't know what the tools do, and the game is maybe going to like tell you in text, well, like, here's roughly how it works and what it does. But that doesn't really mean anything until you apply that knowledge and then see for yourself via experimentation, what does this tool do? I think where a lot of games coming from the more RPG tactics lineage can go a bit wrong is that they end up having a lot of systems that you can and should play around with and experiment with. The problem is a lot of those games will also then do enough tutorializing where you'll think, well, if I need to know something, the game will tell me, right?
Totally.
And it's one of those things where you kind of have to either be all the way in on like tutorializing the campaign or all the way out and say, no, this is a toolbox game. And like, how you put those things to work is up to you. I think another option is, I wrote last week about Jagged Alliance 2. There's like certain opening moves you have to do at the start of every campaign. And that functions like a tutorial, but you still have to feel your way through it. You have to figure out how to use the mechanics to do those opening moves. It's not going to say, and now click here, now use this. You still have to fuck around with stuff and do those easy objectives. And then when the game just opens up, you roughly have figured out anything in this game I am just going to have to screw around with until I see what it does. And, you know, then go from there. But I also don't know how frustrating that is these days. Like, I think it's one thing to lose a 4X or like a Civ type game and say, well, I'll try again. It's, you know, it's not a big investment. But when you're like a campaign tactics game, like XCOM 2 pissed me the fuck off because there's so much that was unclear. And once you started to like get behind, you were a little bit screwed. And so it was this realization that you really needed to know what you were doing. You really needed these things explained to you.
Even in War of the Chosen, a much better version of that game, how often when we were playing that did we hit a text box that wasn't clear about how an ability worked, especially stuff on the kind of larger like meta map scale. And that's stuff that will fuck you up, right? That stuff like, oh wow, I built a tower in the wrong place. Now I can't expand quick enough. Now the alien avatar project is going to advance. This puts the whole campaign in a death spiral.
But do you feel like, to Patrick's example, when you sort of were able to build a house and then there were mechanics attached to that that you hadn't like been instructed, the thing that frustrates me the most about that is if a game is tutorializing to any significant degree, I almost feel like even when an option opens up, I'm not really supposed to screw with it until the game tells me, here's what this does. And so you lose up on the sense of like fun discovery that comes with that. It's not like, oh, I wonder what this does. And so I always end up, it's kind of like when you're maybe this is just on the brain, when you're visiting someone else's house and you're like, can I do this? Can I put this in the dishwasher? Should I just, I'll wait until you ask me to do something. And that's kind of how I feel about games that operate the way.
Yeah.
It sounds like via Patrick's description, that game
so
does.
There's two things. One is there is straight up an in-game guide that you can read. Not a guide. It says guide, but it's just a list of tutorials, right? And so at a certain point, this was after I'd learned most of the stuff in there, I just went through and was like, I'm going to make sure I've read all of this. Again, that is just the person I am. The other half of it is I am the sort of person who's just like, oh, wow, cool. I can recruit people. I'm going to run around and hit recruit until I understand what this means. I'm going to... Oh, cool. There's battalions. What's a battalion? All right. I'm going to spend 20 minutes in these menus figuring out what a battalion is, looking at what all their abilities do, thinking about what the ways I could use them is, figuring out what the requirements are for deploying them. Oh, that's what authority does. Okay, I see. Okay. And this person has a special ability. ability where they do extra damage with battalions, so I should focus on their authority. And to me,
what if you do? What if you're like me and you do the opposite of that, which is that like
you'll still be
try to recruit once when. I don't understand what that means. Like, yeah. I'm just not going to hit that button again until the game says that I'm supposed to. Then randomly, the other side is like, hey, here's battalions. It's like, why are you even telling me this right now? I'm not in a fight. I don't need to use it. Why are you giving me this tutorial at a moment that it's not useful contextually? And I'm just going to forget that it ever exists. And I'm hoping that when I get into a fight, then it'll be like, hey, by the way, battalions. But I don't know if that's true. It seems more likely that I'm going to get into another fight, finish that, then go back and DM Austin and be like, so do I need to fuck with battalions? And then like, or I'm waiting for Kotaku to write the inevitable like tips for playing Fire Emblem Three Houses,
yeah.
Which is like, I'm sure they did. I love those series. It's great. Like it really, it's like a very totally. Useful like framing device for lots of games. And this one desperately needs that because it's hard to not look at like on one hand, I'm like, didn't tell me to recruit. I'm just not going to screw with that. On the other hand, in the back of my mind, I'm also like, am I now putting myself behind the eight ball in the XCOM sort of like meta sense that like, because I didn't start doing recruitment stuff now, it's going to really bite me in the ass
later. The answer
is
no. Just and so that to relieve your anxiety.
I know.
The
I
game
know.
Isn't built like this is the other half of it, which maybe speaks in a different direction. You're recruiting characters because you think they're cool. You're recruiting characters because you're like, oh, wow, this is interesting. The game is balanced because for each house to be self-sustaining, for all of the default characters that you get throughout the storyline to be what you need to beat this game. I ended up with 6 characters on the bench by the end of this game for most of my missions. I was leveling people up because I thought they were cool and I wanted to see them do animations and I wanted to raise the supports between characters because I was interested in what this cool assassin lady would say to this young assassin girl. You know, like, it is not... Right. That stuff is... I'm with you that I think that all that stuff could be tutorialized more cleanly or could, like Rob is saying, be treated like a toolbox and have Dark Souls-style expectations that you're going to come into this game and learn how this game works by just experimenting.
But the game has some of that stuff where, like, gardening, fishing.
Totally.
Like, it says, like, it's like it doesn't... It finds a quest that, like, sends you over there and then just sort of lets it go. Yeah. And, like... The thing, like, you, like, mentioned to me when I was like, should I just use all my fishing stuff? And he's like, well, actually, like, in the calendar, it'll tell you there's good fishing days. And that's fun discovery. Like, yeah. That's you, the game, saying, like, here's an element of our game, and then you need to kind of naturally discover through the course of play, like, the optimal way or the more interesting ways to engage with, like, that ancillary bit. But, yeah, and again, I've played these before. I've played XCOM. I've beaten XCOM 1 and 2. Like, I have a familiarity, so, like, I just worry given, like, if I'm having little stressors on a series that I feel like I should just be able to jump in, like, right into the deep end, and I'm going, like, it just worries me, and I guess I'm trying to express for folks,
totally.
If you jumped in thinking, like, this is your first one, and you're like, oh, no, like, just chill, look things up, ask questions. I think the game is still very approachable as, like, a new Fire Emblem, but you are not wrong for being, like, yo, Nintendo.
Yeah, like, the thing that I just so super want to underscore is not the fear of, like, am I not playing optimally? Am I being efficient enough? Mm. It's okay. This is not that game. This is not the game that... There are ways in which playing really well will benefit you in ways that you're excited about. Making sure that, like, every... Because this is stuff they definitely don't explain that you and I haven't even brought up yet. But things like, hey, make sure everyone on your team gets kills so they level up, right? Make sure that you're, like, spreading the love around, so to speak. You're not just
Bring a weak character in that, like, totally. Can get some stabs in, but they stay behind.
They get the final hit in, but they don't... All that stuff is stuff that we know because we've played these games before that is also not tutorialized. But... Despite that, really what I want to say is just, like, there's so much of it. There's the ability to grind. There's the ability to, like, raise a character who you've underleveled back up if you want to. There's so many ways in which that sort of, like, stark efficiency, that sort of play where you're, like, dialed all the way in is not necessary. Mm-hmm. In some ways, better than it's ever been in the series. And there's so much of it that, like... Wasting 3 weeks at the top of the game or wasting 2 months at the top of the game or not knowing that you could have been engaging with recruitment mechanics. Don't feel like you have to start over now. Don't feel if you've already put 6 hours in, you're like, fuck, I didn't realize that I could XYZ. Let me tell you, you still have 10 times more game to come. You're going to be all right in terms of writing the course or feeling good about it. So Patrick is totally right that, like, if you feel lost right now, totally fine. But also, don't feel like you've wasted time or that you fucked up or that, like, there is there is some.
It doesn't have a meta like XCOM where like you can legitimately get
there
to a point
no
where
yes.
it's going to be a it's going to be a failed run and you're going to have to go back to a save or start over with like shared knowledge.
Right.
It's my one, it sounds like more what you're saying is that like you can be brutally efficient and be so much better.
Yes.
But even if you do none of that stuff, the game gives you guardrails to either buff that stuff up or it'll just keep you in the middle of the road. Just fine, and like you'll be okay, even if you're not doing like the brutal efficiency.
The thing that I will say, if you feel really like if you, I kept a lot of saves just in case. Mostly it was for like narrative reasons of like if I want to make a different conversation choice or something. Mm-hmm. Not that this is like a wild branching game, but sometimes I did. So I would keep a save at the beginning of every month, right? And then I would also have my week to week save because the game is broken up into months where every week you get to instruct your students and also then kind of explore the area or do a side battle or something like that, whatever one of four options basically. And I would keep a save from the beginning of every month. At the start of the month, I would replace that monthly save with a new monthly save. And I think I only went back to it once or twice. And again, both times it was for narrative reasons. It was like making a different choice about a character I wanted to do something with versus like I fucked up or I needed to grind more. I never needed to go back and grind more or anything like that. But that stuff is available to you if you want that. Rob.
How much is there good that you pointed out the like I need to be an efficiency machine drive that can derail a game. Like even when you're doing being reasonably successful, you can start to feel like,
oh, definitely.
I should play this better. But how much is there also kind of buyer's remorse about like narrative combos and choices you've made over this? Because this is the other thing.
Little. There's one big choice in this game and only for one house. Everything else is about like, are you building your supports with characters? And if you're not, you give them some gifts. Like, it is not a branching path game. It is not a game that's like, you fucked
gifts,
up.
You can eat with
you
them.
You can eat with them.
Like,
you can go to the choir
to, like,
with
move
them.
Up the scale.
Right. So this is a game in which it's like, hey, there's only a couple things we're tracking in terms of narrative progress with characters, which is support. And there's a bunch of ways for you to do that. Bring them in a battle with you and stand near them while you fight. So eventually, you can kind of assign them as like adjutants, which are like squires almost, like your backup bodyguards to units. And that'll raise your support. Maybe that you have someone who's like, I really don't need a second lancer in this fucking mission, but I still want to raise their support. I'm going to attach them to my unit or to the unit that I want them to raise support with. There's like a panoply of ways to produce those effects. And so there is a sort of like you're trying to fill your stomach. It's a buffet. You know, maybe you don't want the mac and cheese. Maybe you want the salad. Maybe you want the ribs. But like you're going to get your stomach filled. And that is the kind of design strategy that they went with versus you need to master these seven different things. Like the gardening and the fishing is a good example of this. The gardening and the fishing, not really, they don't really add up to something at the end where you're like, yes, I've done the great garden. Here's what I did though is there was a point at which I really wanted to upgrade a bunch of weapons at once. And I had enough money to upgrade most of them. But then I realized like, I'm sitting on 1,000,000 fish. I'm gonna fucking sell those fish. And I sold 30 fish or something and suddenly had this huge influx of money that I could use to upgrade weapons, to just like throw away shit that was almost broken, to buy more healing items and stuff like that. And to buy a bunch of gifts to give people who I was like, I kind of have ignored your support thing. I should mm-hmm. do that. Along with like certain quests did come up that were like, hey, provide this fish or provide this plant or whatever. One of them I didn't complete. Right. I never found a fucking onion for some reason. I think I was too focused on the high level gardening and I never just got a nice onion in my storehouse. And so just make sure you plant some vegetables, not just the nice flowers. That's what I'm going to say.
Gotcha. Good tips.
Any other real talk though from Kato and Patrick who are already playing this? Are there questions about
house? Let's talk picking a house.
All right. It's
the most traumatic experience of 2019.
Tell me about picking a house. tell me about going house shopping.
It comes really early in the game. Mm-hmm. I thought this was going to be like a 6 hours in. We're going to rotate you through three different houses. You're going to get pretty familiar with everyone, but you're going to fall in love with one in particular, and then you'll just go down that path. Fire Emblem Three Houses, like, absolutely not. What if an hour into the game, you can scroll through some character lists and get, like, a sort of vibe of each section and then make the most consequential choice that you will make in the game, which is, like, who you'll align with and, like, see the political effects and social effects for the next 60 hours. And so what I chose to do, I, like, had, like, everyone went to bed early. on Saturday. I had like a solid like 90 minutes that I could sit and actually play this to myself. I was like, cool, I'm like going to finally really get into this game. And instead, in like 15 minutes, like, because I'd already done the really intro stuff, I hit this wall and like had my glass of whiskey and was just sitting and staring at the ceiling, unable to come to a decision. Uh-huh. And then I went with my heart, like on one hand, I was deeply swayed by the content argument. I put it out on Twitter. Uh-huh. I was just like, is anyone with me? Are you just staring at this screen? And it was just a lot of hallelujah. Yes, I am. It was just a lot of people having similar struggles on Saturday night looking at this screen. And one person deeply swayed me on the sense of like, look, Austin already picked the golden deer, right? Golden deer? That's
golden
the one,
deer.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
The only correct
He already, that's one content lane. You know, there are other content lanes. I was like, that's right. You are right. That is how that works. It's like, okay, so Golden Deer is off. Plus, I was also, look, all my friends, I get it. Golden Deer, like, who wouldn't want to align themselves with Prince?
Yeah.
Like, the that's musician it. Prince
is leading a house
brought into Fire Emblem.
Of cool outsiders.
Deeply, look, Prince is one of my all-time favorite musicians. Like, I get it. But that's what everyone is doing. And I got, you know, I was like, I have to take that out. That's not even an option. I just removed Golden Deer from the table.
So
like,
your choice
that's
now.
What everyone else,
Black Eagle, Blue Lion.
Black Eagle and Blue Lion.
The crew that I couldn't even remember their name last week. I kept being like, Blue Lion.
And that, you know what? Your response there, I felt that way to begin with in that game. I was like, I look at this blonde motherfucker, and I was like, look, you look competent. You look like, oh, I got my shit together. I want something a little messier. I want something that I feel a little more uneasy about. And like, Black Eagle specifically has one character that just wants to take a nap constantly. Just wants to take naps. He's here to fight, but he's also here to take naps. And then I'm so early, so I don't really have all their names internalized yet. But people remember these personalities if you've made the right choice and joined Team Black Eagle.
Wow.
God, this is so funny.
That said, I think, isn't she like, she's going to be the princess, which means she's going to be like the head of the, she may be an imperialist, so we may have problems.
The heir of the empire. Yep. Edelgard.
Look, I think everyone's got their problems on that level. I feel like we're all going to come out pretty messy on the other side of this process. That's my gut feeling.
Uh-huh.
But there's also a character, this girl who, she's very shy. To the point
she's
that
the best.
Like her dialogue is stuck at least initially in the early parts of the game. She's behind a door.
She's the best.
And so
Bernadetta.
Yes.
Bernadetta.
Confession?
She's just in her dorm room and refuses to come out.
Okay.
Like I was rewarded. So of course I went with Black Eagle, and I was rewarded specifically so swayed by this character where I went up and one of my first dialogue choices with her was, I don't know, like, you know, you say something, and then she responds noncommittally, doesn't want to come out. And then one of your options is to, like, respect her choice or to say there's a cake outside. I said there was a cake outside.
Is there a cake?
There is not a cake outside.
Oh, my Lord.
God.
And wow. She was like, I love cake. I'll have some later. And then you get, like, support up. Like, she enjoys the... I was given a support up for a lie.
For a lie.
She's going to come out, and there will not be a cake.
Oh, the cakes are gone.
Okay. So the case it's making is that she wants to feel included. She wants to be invited. Mm-hmm. She appreciates getting the invitation.
Yes.
But she can't... She's not wired in a way that, like, she will be restored or recharged by taking advantage of that, but it is important to her to feel that connection and that it's there if she needs it. Okay.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah, I wouldn't sweat that cake. She's not, she just needs to know that someone thought about the cake.
Yeah. This is like the equivalent of, like, I recently, like, told a friend of mine, thank you for continuing to invite Katie and I to your parties in the city that you know in no circumstance could we ever get out on a Saturday night to come to that party. But it actually is very touching and meaningful that you continue to include me on the invite list, because it just means you're thinking of me, even though I cannot go to that party and will never be able to. But thank you. So, like, I understand. I see where she's coming from. So anyway, that's
Bernadetta.
I'm very happy with my choice.
High on my list of characters I wanted to recruit, but just could not. I wasn't specking to be an archer, and I didn't get her support up high enough before the cutoff. And so I did not get to recruit her. And that That bummed me out in the second half of the game. So I was like,
Kato, walk me through it. You one of these, oh, I want to be part of the Golden Deer Club. That's what all my friends are doing.
Listen.
No. Yes. But no, not because of that. Okay. Like, fucking, the choice was immediate.
I wanted you irritated to start this conversation. So,
hey, what'd you go with?
Golden Deer, obviously. Sorry, the only correct choice.
Okay.
Because
it's so good.
Because
to
he's
have.
Hot okay. yeah. and he also hot. They're not monarchs.
Okay, they are.
They're nobles. It's not great still, but
Rob,
it's better.
Oh my lord.
Rob, holy shit. Wait. Rob, can I set this up for you? Rob, can I set up what the situation is?
Hold on.
Can I set just so I want your full judgment?
Look.
Rob, mm-hmm. So the world used to be
here we go.
Two things. There used to be the church and the empire, and they were locked hand in hand. The empire, and this is stuff you could read about right away in the library in this game, so this is not spoilers. This is the setup for the game. At some point, there was a rebellion, and a kingdom arose in the north, and they separated from the empire, and then the church recognized them as a sovereign state, and because no one wants to fuck with the church... All right, I guess, you know, there was also a civil war. So now there's a kingdom and an empire. Then a bunch of nobles in the eastern part of the kingdom are like, you know what? Fuck this kingdom shit. And they create the Leicester Alliance that is comprised of five ruling noble houses that still have kind of an executive leader, but those five houses are autonomous inside of the alliance. They're kind of like a set of noble smaller kingdoms or dukedoms that all kind of pull up into the alliance. That is the setup. Kato chose the latter, which I get where he's coming from.
Of the options, look. It doesn't help that...
Better a petty tyrant than a large one? Like, what's the...
No, I mean, just... Yeah. Yes, actually.
Okay.
You know, spread the power a little bit, you know? It's a step in the right direction away from a
Kato,
single ruler.
I strongly recommend
right?
you read and, any medieval history.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Look!
Just spread the power out so that... Uh-huh.
Look, if we have no appeal to a higher authority that you can make, but tons of basically regional tyrants with unlimited power and no accountability,
their accountability
that's the ideal
is to
society.
Each other,
that's,
right?
That's how we build. That's how we build a better future, and that's why the county sheriff is the most beloved institution in American law.
Also, it's Prince.
It's Golden
Prince.
Deer is your local county sheriff.
It's like an alliance of county sheriffs.
Oh, good. It's good. It's the FOP.
Uh-huh.
Great.
Yeah. God.
No, see, this is the thing. Like, the thing is, you want the monarchs to just crush. I mean, just absolutely smoke the nobility. Just, like, absolutely torch them. Because what they're doing then is they're torching the pillars of their own legitimacy.
Right.
And then, comrade. Yeah. Then, once the hollow edifice of monarchy is exposed,
yeah.
Then we can build a truly just society in order. So,
I feel like
actually,
it's easier to make the mental
this is why
leap.
People have accused me of monarchist leaps. Tendencies.
Uh huh. But really, you're an accelerationist. Right? You're like, hey,
well,
the more.
That's been brought into some disrepute.
The more obvious
I reject that label.
The contradictions of society are the more quickly we'll move towards taking real direct action. You know, the Leicester Alliance is only holding off. It's reformist, right? Like it's the whole thing of like, hey, listen, at least we're not an empire. And then the people go like, yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah, we're not an empire. We're 13 county sheriffs. Yeah, that's better.
But why those 13?
Because of real talk. Because of their bloodlines.
Right.
So
someone's going to notice that eventually and be like, you know what? That's fucked.
Yeah, man. Someone is eventually going to notice that maybe you shouldn't build a society around 13 bloodlines or whatever. That's fucked.
It's my favorite Netflix show.
You know who's
bloodlines.
The best person to recognize that, though?
Who's that?
The king.
Ah. The king. God, I'm so I am so so. What
the
I,
folly of my errors.
Yeah, well, this is the things I'm so curious about because I think that now having known now having a good idea of what those other paths offer, I think my list of like coolest to least cool, Golden Deer number one.
Hell yeah!
There's something really cool at the end of that game that's only for the Golden Deer. Black Eagle, number two, easy. easy with a bullet. Number two, Black Eagle.
Yeah.
Some cool shit for Black Eagle that I will not get into, but I'm excited for people to get to. And then I've heard nothing cool about Blue Lion.
Picking them?
I don't know. I think it's a lot of second playthrough things, because if you've seen the trailer to this game, they show what all the post-time jump characters look like. And Dimitri, the leader of Blue Lion, his leap from part one to part two is the biggest leap there is.
Mm.
Because he goes from, like, kind of, like you said,
He grows a beard.
There's more than that. He grows a beard, his hair is all fucked up, and he has an eye patch. And he's like...
Oh.
And he's, like, yelling. He's, like, lost his cool entirely. Like, the facade completely breaks in that trailer.
Huh. Because that's, like, the pre-jump Dimitri, just, like, he just seemed like just too eager to please in a way that I found irritating. And, like, I need, you know what?
Damn.
Anything but this.
I'm going to show you a picture of him post-jump.
Becoming friends with Patrick is harsh and, like, fraught with social perils.
This is Dimitri post-jump here. He seems like he's gone through some shit.
Damn. You know what? See, I would follow that man.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the pitch I got.
Yeah, I know. I want to know what happens. I beat this game. So that's the thing I did over the last weekend was I finished this game. I'm up to 71 hours. And I beat it once.
Great.
And I could have done it quicker. Here's the thing that I think speaks kind of volume about this game or about what I like about it is I was on what I knew would be the last month of this game. And I still did side battles so that I could finish leveling someone in their class and so they could master the class and get a cool ability, because I thought that was like, I want them to be in a different class at the very end of this game. They've earned it. Let me do a side battle that I do not need the XP from at all just to do this for them. But I still don't know what happened to Blue Eagle. I don't know what the deal is there. Like, I know what happened in my game, but I don't know how they got there. And there are still huge questions about the path of Blue Lion, Black Eagle. I know what the big plot decisions were from that house, but I don't necessarily know what went into those plot decisions or what it would be like for the other side of the player, because the back half of the game is completely unique from house to house. And there aren't, I believe, completely unique. Maybe there's a couple of overlap missions, but it's a bunch of totally unique stuff because they're coming from completely different scenarios, basically. Right. But I will say, from talking to people, Golden Deer has like a level that no one else has that's super dope, and I want to talk to people about it. I hope people beat this game, because I want to talk spoilers, and the only way to do that is to try people beat this game. Any other Fire Emblem stuff, or should we take a quick break and then talk about other video games and non-video games, board games, maybe?
Yeah,
we'll see. All right, let's take a break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, we are back. Slack isn't. Did y'all see this?
What?
Slack's down.
Oh, good.
Slack's haunted.
Slack's.
What else is going on? Kato, you and I actually hung out a little bit this weekend.
Slack's haunted. Oh, yeah.
I watched you. So I went to the Game Devs of Color conference, which is incredible. Every year, really great talks, really great games. And I saw Kato, like we did eventually talk.
But
the bulk of the time I saw you, like for real, an hour of time.
Was that? No.
Like 40 minutes at least. You were playing a single game demo. You were playing, what was the name of that game?
Dreams. Oh, shit.
I'm going to find the name.
Dreams?
Yeah. It's not that.
No. She dreams of something. God damn it.
She dreams elsewhere.
She dreams elsewhere. That's it. Okay.
A surreal adventure RPG about dreams and the extent to which they mirror reality.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
Yeah, I would say so. Or at least I. It's up in the air whether or not it's a dream, I guess, gotcha. In the demo. But yeah, it was really interesting. This kind of set in the real world, but then the characters go into this surreal dreamscape. What I really enjoyed about it was the look was really cool. It was mostly black and white, but then there's a lot of great color choices for highlights and backgrounds and stuff. And also the dialogue was really great. I forgot her name. I think Talia. You play Talia, who is leaving some sort of party or social interaction kind of distressed, and you see your dog run out the door, and you go to chase him down, and then end up in this weird dream space where there's a bunch of monsters and you have to fight, and it's an RPG system, and it's very it feels very Persona adjacent in that most of the time you're doing elemental attacks, and you want to find the weaknesses mm-hmm. to those enemies and things like that. There's a turn order, so, you want to think about which enemies you are attacking based on that. But a lot of it is interesting because it just had really, I guess the word for it is just naturalistic, really good, these people that are in this game, they're friends, they're shooting the shit, even though things are weird as hell, in a way that's really enjoyable, and but also
it feels like people who are friends who are just talking to each other.
Yeah, and also does good setup on this is gonna be a story about the unspoken about tensions between this group of friends, even though you're all on the same team and fighting these enemies, there's still it seems to be setting up some interesting dynamics between the group. And that was basically the only game I played because it was so packed, which is cool, which is yes. Really, really great that this is the second year I've gone. Last year, it was not as crowded, and so we were able to play a few more games. But this year, it was just being in a sardine can almost the whole time.
It was so packed. There's so many people there, which is, again, great.
It was just really
I wish there was more space available for them, because it's getting to the point where it's such a cool big,
I feel next year they may need to find something a little bit bigger. It's growing.
I want to shout out three things.
Yeah.
Four things. One, gotcha. I want to shout out Super Space Club by developer Graham of Legend, which is asteroids with other enemy ships, and also bright colors. It just felt good. The ship control had that thing that Galaxy has, which it's just fun to dodge through asteroids and stuff like that. It seemed pretty early. I'm very curious about what the overall structure is, but that it seemed dope and it felt good, which is already a great thing. Two, the fish one.
The fish one?
Did you see the fish one?
Oh, the one where you slap a fish?
Sashimi Slammers by Furious Fish Friends, in which the controllers are plastic or rubber fish that you slam, and those control what the fish do on screen, and you kind of push your opponent into the edge of the screen where there is a deep fryer, and more games where you slap fish as the controls. Please. Yeah. Which is
more weird controllers.
Totally. one of my favorite other things that had an alternate controller situation was this game that was in a briefcase that had little robots in it, almost Rock'em Sock'em Robot style, little red robot, one blue robot that were physical things, called Robot Slow Dance, who, instead of Rock'em Sock'em Robots punching each other, you dance and you talk, and it's really cool. Final thing I want to shout out is Playdate was there.
Oh, yeah.
I held a Playdate this weekend. Held the little, you know, yellow console that we've talked about earlier this year. I cranked that crank.
It's smaller than I thought.
It's very tiny.
How's that crank feel?
Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty all
pretty
right.
good.
Yeah.
And that game is kind of cool.
Like, is it smooth? Is it
smooth.
Like a chunkiness to it?
There's no chunkiness. It's smooth, but it's like a, you know, there's like a little bit of friction. It's not loose.
There's resistance.
Yes.
Yeah, there's resistance on the crank, but it's not like stepped at all. It's not like tick, 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 tick.
No.
It's just like you could spin
it. But neither is it like a bike wheel without the chain on. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not just like woo.
Right.
It's a pretty good, it's at the right level of resistance. And that game that is is that the Keita Takahashi one?
Yes.
Is like you're playing a person who's going on a date and you need to navigate your way to the date by using the crank, which moves you back and forward in space.
Mm-hmm.
And you have certain interactions when you come across certain things. So, like, there's a flower on the ground, you kneel down to smell the flower. You, like, bend over to smell the flower. If there's, like, monkey bars, you jump up to grab the monkey bars. And then that also, like, separates your body into three, like, your top, your like, center, and your legs. And as you're trying to...
How does that work? Like literally, like what's the difference between just like crank, 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 crank? Is there like something
you'll
that happens
run through it really quick? You'll just like spin. You'll just like go through the animation very quickly. And so the thing is, like, things are coming at you or coming from behind you that you need to dodge. So like, oh, a weird bug is coming at me. I better be near the flower and I better bend over to like smell the rose while the bug is coming at me, which will go over my head and miss me. Or I need to hop over this hurdle while something is coming across the ground or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of like, go forward. Okay, here it comes. All right, now I have to go down to the thing. Okay, now I'm going to jump up and grab the monkey bars to split myself into two, but then I have to back up and jump back to the flower. And, you know, it's like that sort of thing. It's mostly just a very cute, fun toy. Like I'm very curious what the rest of these games are. Obviously, I'm not saying this is not a game. This thing that we're talking about is a game, but I had a very toy-like experience with the device, which is like, oh wow, what is this cool thing? And I like toys a lot. I think toys are good. I think it's like I'm not diminishing it. I'm just saying that like my experience with it is similar to like a puzzle box or just like this is a cool device to play with. I'm so curious to see what the other games will be coming out. And part of why they were there was to see about getting more devs for it.
Yeah.
And given exactly.
Which is good because given the issues they had
around their name.
That one festival.
Also called Playdate.
Like,
I'm glad that they are actively trying to recruit folks and talk to devs.
Yeah, it's one thing to do it on social media and say, please retweet and apply. It's like quite another to like meaningfully go to a, you know, it's not perfect. You know, it doesn't necessarily fix all the woes, but it is another to actually go to a place and be talking to people than to just fire off a tweet.
The thing I just also want to say is a lot of great fans were there and shout outs to anyone who came up and said, hey, and shout outs to anyone who like didn't do that, but was there and was like, oh wow, that's them. Like also shout outs to you. Even if you didn't have the chance to come up and say, hey, or didn't want to, really great show. I'm really excited to see what they do next year.
One quick thing is, there are some really interesting panels that I saw and, I believe those are archived and being brought up on their YouTube. And they're all worth checking out, but I wanted to shout out one in particular that was really interesting from a trans dev that works on the NASCAR series. And she gave a talk about how she shepherded this feature that she really wanted to get into the game through the development process and how she brought other people on board with the idea of creating a non-binary character creator where you don't choose a gender to start, and that doesn't change the base model. The base model kind of has sliders that go like towards the femme end of the spectrum, towards the masculine end of the spectrum, and like you can slide them all up and down however you wish, and nothing is really locked out of your choices. So, you know, It's weird to say that like a NASCAR game of all things has a non-binary character creator, but it was really cool to hear how she was able to pull that off, and so that's worth looking up for sure. And also the hip hop and games panel was really cool. Friend of the show, Mike Eagle
was there. Yeah, along with Samus,
Megaran. The developer of the game, whose name I'm forgetting, but the game that I was playing was also on that panel.
Awesome.
Because I forgot to mention, the soundtrack in that game is really dope.
Awesome.
Really cool, lo-fi chill hip-hop beats to study to style mm-hmm. stuff going on in there. But yeah, the really great talks and definitely worth checking out on, I believe, I gotta find their YouTube. I think it's on their YouTube.
Cool. So check that out. Again, Game Devs of Color, some really cool stuff. That game that you were talking about before, again, was called She Dreams Elsewhere. Mm-hmm. That's the big one to look up in that little convo, little section. Rob.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
One other thing, because it was really short and I only got, I got to play it, but there was one game called Can Androids Pray, which was interesting.
Yeah, I've played that. So I played through a build of it a few months ago that I think was the complete build.
Okay, cool. They said there were two versions, and I think that means
there are,
given the setup, you can play as the other person.
My understanding is there are two versions that are different in color. It's like a way of supporting the dev. It's not a way of, there's not a narrative division and do those two versions.
All right.
I'm pretty sure that's the way that the itch page makes it anyway. That is only on itch also. And I actually briefly talked to the writer on that game at the event. And he was saying that, like, hey,
Zolivar?
Yeah, Zolivar, who was saying, like, hey, did you know you can launch a game on itch and just itch and still do pretty okay when it's scaled for that platform? Because Androids Prey did not launch on Steam. It's a game by three people. Natalie Clayton was the lead, like, programmer on it, and I think, like, the lead dev, with Zolivar doing the writing, and then Priscilla Snow doing the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. I really love the soundtrack for it a lot.
That's cool.
But yeah, there's like a Can Androids Prey Red and Can Androids Prey Blue. And I'm pretty sure, based on reading the thing, that the bundle is mostly like, hey, they're largely the same game. There's different colors, there's differences in palette, but that's kind of it.
Gotcha.
But hey, this is a way to, like, support us a little bit more. But hey, if you can only afford one of them, you could just buy one of them.
Right.
That's like, you know, $7 or something for the package. What do you think of it?
I enjoyed it. I mean, it's a short little narrative experience. The setup really quick is you are in a mech that is disabled on some toxic planet. So you're not supposed to open your capsule, and you're talking to a teammate, a peer. And you kind of talk through your final moments, essentially, as, like, your life support starts to run out. And, you know, it has, you know, interesting questions about, I mean, it's called Can Androids Prey, which, you know, it delves into the whole, like, AI, is it, you know, where do you draw the line between a consciousness and, like, yeah, a set of programs, et cetera, et cetera, that sort of stuff. But I think the setting of these, like, two mech pilots, like, brought an interesting new wrinkle to those questions that have been, you know, talked about multiple times already in Cyberpunk's, like, stuff.
Yeah. I really love the setting. I really think it looks great and sounds great.
Yeah.
It definitely has, like, I think that, like, the core premise is fantastic. I'm just like, all right, like, what do you do in this situation? Yeah. And, like, what are these people talking about? For sure. Cool.
I did find it is just called the Game Devs of Color Expo. If you put that into YouTube, you will find their YouTube channel.
And that has the talks and stuff.
That has the talks from this year.
Cool. Rob, you spent a week playing board games. I saw you tweet about, and it seemed like you were fatigued and exhausted, and that the Greek state needed to come to some decisions. I don't know what the situation was there, but it seemed like both Sparta and Athens were at a breaking point. Is that fair to say, or have I misunderstood the situation?
Well. No, it's interesting. So we were playing Mark Herman's Pericles, which I think is published by GMT Games. And first of all, like going into this, this is me at like the most on my bullshit. Like this is the period of classics history I know better than anything. Like there is any subject in the world that I know, it's the Peloponnesian War. Like that's it. But it is a war game, but it is a war game of domestic politics in some ways. Huh. So the setting for this game is the like almost century long power struggle between Athens and Sparta following their defeat of the Persians in the Persian Wars. And basically Athens is kind of the first of the city, Greek city states to create like a stable alliance structure that they really quickly transform into an empire. Like you join what's called the Delian League, which was originally sort of a NATO type organization. Well, more of a Warsaw Pact organization to fight the Persians. And then you can never leave. You pay your membership dues. You give the Athenians control of basically your military and your foreign policy. And what member states discovered like 20 years later when the Persians weren't such a pressing threat was when they were like, hey, do we need to pay our membership dues right now? And do you need to continue basically running our military and dictating policy for us? And the Athenians were like, absolutely you do. And we will use the combined resources of the Delian League to crush you. The Spartans on the other side are a more traditional alliance structure. They have longstanding friendships and allies. They're a land-based power. But they are not quite sort of the Warsaw Pact model that the Athenians had adopted. For about a century, these two sides were sort of in competition, not in direct warfare for a lot of it, but just constantly trying to swing people over to their side, take strategic positions around the Aegean Sea.
All right. We are going to wrap this up. Rob's computer died is the thing that happened. Who started telling me a story about ancient Greece, I think. Pericles was there.
You fill in the blanks. War. We started with Fire Emblem. We made it to Greece. Just take some of that info and jumble it together.
Thracia sounds like a place in ancient Greece. That's a thing that Patrick just wrote about. People should go read. There's an article up on the site called, I don't remember the actual title.
I've never even thought about how you pronounce that. I've never even like
Thracia.
In my head, I was saying Thracia.
Thracia is not bad. The near impossible 20-year journey to translate Fire Emblem Thracia 776. A really good article people should go read about the 20-year journey it took for fans to translate the quote-unquote untranslatable, the translation patch killer. My worst AKA.
Yeah, there was a... Yeah, around E3, this patch came out around E3 time, and... the kind of headline around it then from a couple of like fan sites was like, oh, like the final game in the Fire Emblem series has not been translated officially or unofficially has kind of been slotted in. So you can at this point now download patches to ROMs to you rip your own ROM and apply a patch if you want to do it legally, because that's what everybody does.
Yeah, you import it. You dump the ROM. Yeah.
Hey. Yep. 100%.
Thracia.
And
you look up the pronunciation.
Thracia.
No, ancient name given to the southern Balkan regions, land inhabited by the Thracians. That's the real place.
I believe it.
Straight up.
Oh, yeah. Cool. That makes sense. All right. Well, we'll accept that as canon. And so, you know, like, when I looked at that, it kind of read some of the comments on people. It was like, oh, it's been translated before, but it was like a garbage, like, meme translation. And, like, this has taken 20 years for this translation to occur. And, like, my favorite thing is to, like so often, like, something shoots up on Reddit, and it's like... There's always usually a story behind the story. And so if you saw a tweet from mine, me having sort of like a writerly crisis like 2 weeks ago that was like, I've written thousands of words for a story that I no longer know if it's any good, but I'm just going to keep going because it's too late now and I'll publish it for the content. Like, this is the story. And I think it did turn out well because it's I've always had this like pet theory of like there's so many stories that just kind of go untold because the internet just moves so fast, and things like early Fire Emblem fandoms, like, none of that stuff was really chronicled because there wasn't even a chance for it to, like, float up on a place like Reddit. So part of what's fascinating about the story is, like, there are, like, multiple localizations of this game. And, like, one of them was what they call a script translation, which is that somebody did a really good, well-liked translation of the Japanese script for Thracia, but then didn't have the programming expertise to turn it into a patch that could get into the game. It's like those are different disciplines. And you know, this is a world in which people spend years working on a thing that could get a cease and desist and could they cannot ever make any money on it. So it's like it's just like difficult to it's understandable why lots of efforts start and fail. And this one in particular, because Thracia has what with the successful team called Project Exile, they described the game as having spaghetti code because it was not difficult to like it's not difficult to like insert like to write something that inserts like something into the code, but you need to know where to put it. And because this game was released both on something called Nintendo Power, which was like a you would buy a rewritable cartridge in Japan, and then you would go and pay money at a kiosk, put the cartridge in. And it would write the cartridge with a game. And it wasn't a rental system. What? You were buying the game. But then I believe the way it worked was like you could bring the cartridge back and sell the game, like, and get a discount on another game. I believe that's the way it worked. That's it was a really wild, interesting system. And Thracia was released. There were games exclusively released for this system. I think most of them eventually got cartridge releases, like, separate, including Thracia. But so that means there are two of them. And so it's like some fans would start a programming patch that was on like the Nintendo Power version, and others would do the cartridge release because they actually did like some bug fixes on like the one that got a cartridge release. And so there's just a lot of this stuff gets like lost to the wind and message board threads. And it was like interesting to, I was successful in being able to track down some of these people, like the original. So like there was a script translation that, like I said, that people really liked. And then someone called Shia, calling us Shia online, decided, oh, I'm going to do my own localization and also do a patch, and just didn't grab any of the script that was just sitting there already fully translated to use. They wanted to do their own. Cause like these fan projects often involve like a lot of ego, and they're like small, like side projects. And this person, as it turns out, as I discovered, was a senior in high school. They like started this project when they were like a sophomore or a junior. So like, without getting into the meme that became like, that was born out of this, like it was something that came from what anime was it? Let me find it.
I forget.
Oh, I have it right here. Give me a second.
It was the Yu-Gi-Oh! Abridged YouTube series, which is like a comedy series. The abridged series are things fans make that are like abridged versions, quote unquote, of the original series, jokes.
But they're comedy.
They're comedy. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly.
They're comedy overdubs.
Yes. Exactly.
Yes. And so it's like this meme is born out of that. It's a localization that has like, it crashes. It's hard to complete. And this becomes sort of the canon version. But like this person leaves a note like in their last update that the quote here I have is this may be one of the last releases. I may never finish. Live with it. It turns out tracking that person down, you know, who is in the Smash community now and stuff like that. Like they still are involved in Nintendo fandom. Like they had severe migraine issues that like sent them to the hospital and made it so that they could no longer do the thing that teenagers do, which is like stay up all night working on different things. They also had to finish high school. So it's just like there were so many stories about people's personal lives that get like caught up in projects. And
yeah.
This piece, I think, regardless of whether you are interested in Fire Emblem or have any interest in ever playing Thracia, like, is a nice. If you've been on the internet, like, you've probably seen some of stuff like this, and it's just interesting to listen to the people that, like, were part of that work and like made a part of history that Nintendo will never acknowledge, which is like the weird part of this. The story only kind of touches on is that it's like it's an important part of like history that all of Fire Emblem can, on some level, be played in English. The localizations are not consistent and, you know, have different values and like approach things differently. But like if you play Three Houses and like, oh my gosh, like I want to go back and play the others, like now you can. Like there are an avenue to play the entire franchise in English in a way that there's no indication Nintendo is ever going to spend the time to localize these games on the NES and the SNES. Like, there's just, you know, maybe they'll do a one-off at some point, like, because it'd be like a stopgap in between releases. But my guess is they just keep pushing forward with anime 3D Fire Emblem, and this stuff gets left to, this is why they don't issue cease and desist, right? It's like when someone does an ambitious Metroid remake, it's like, you know what, like, Nintendo might do something like that. Yeah. And they did one a couple of years back, right? The, on the 3DS. So it's like, on some level, it's a bummer how Nintendo is so aggressive with fan projects, because it seems like, just chill a little bit. But this stuff almost never gets knocked down by their legal team, probably because it's just not worth the effort to do it. But it's also nice that it stays there, because it means, like, for fans, you know, Fire Emblem fans or people who are curious, it's like, you can go and check out, you know, where this series has come from, because Thracia and the game that this is a direct sequel to,
Genealogy of the Holy War,
yes, are largely seen by the fan, yeah, which is a great name, yeah, for by the way, is largely seen as like setting a lot of the foundation for modern Fire Emblem. So like Awakening gets a lot of the credit for popularizing like where the franchise is now, but like the groundwork for a lot of that was really laid in these games. And Genealogy of the Holy War is the game that the team behind Three Houses cited as like the whole like school structure was taken from that. So like in a lot of ways, Three Houses is like a spiritual sequel to Genealogy of the Holy War. So yeah, that is
30 years.
That's my piece up now.
30 years of Fire Emblem now. Next year.
Damn.
First one came out in 1990, which is like, oh yeah, video games have been around for a while. Fuck.
It came in the NES. Like, yeah. it's just like it does. It was, in my head, Fire Emblem started on the Game Boy Advance.
Right, but that's for us.
Because that was like that right.
That was the first one that came out in the West, right? Yeah. So weird. Anyway, thank you all for joining us. Rob is fixing a computer. I hope that computer is okay.
Hopefully.
Crossing my fingers.
Fire Emblem started on the GameCube.
That's not true.
When Roy and Mario were in Melee.
Okay, well, actually, in some sense, that is a part of the story, because their popularity in Smash is what led Nintendo to decide to bring the games over.
Which is funny.
It's very funny.
Because, like, why would they include them in the first place if they weren't?
Because they're already in the game.
But why were they in the game in the first place?
It turns out people in Japan play video games.
Yeah. I think well, like, it was like a big,
I was
like,
gonna say, made a big push. It's probably, yeah.
Like, he basically said, like, please.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so basically, Fire Emblem,
yeah.
You like Three Houses? Once again.
Kiss the motherfucking
ring.
Thank you, Sakurai.
Let that man sleep.
Let him sleep. Let him make anything else.
You know what? Sakurai, it seems like at a certain point, Sakurai's making his choices, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This is like trying to tell Austin to sleep. You know, you can put in the effort.
I try to sleep every night. It's just harder every night.
I dream of sleeping. All right. On that note, follow me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. And follow Kato at
@A_Kato_appears.
And Patrick.
At Patrick Klopik.
We watch Patrick play Mario Maker on Mondays and Wednesdays and Fridays at twitch.tv/Patrick Klopik. Shout out to Rob. Rob is gone, but you can follow Rob at twitter.com/RobZach. And you can follow everything we do, twitter.com/Waypoint, waypoint.advice.com. What else? Is there anything else? Is that it?
Facebook, Waypoint Advice.
Ava.
No, but
end of Ava.
Ava. No,
Ava.
Like, what else?
Our end of Ava.
Our end of Ava. End of Austin.
End of Ava. Until the rebuilds finish.
This week we are going to do episodes 25, 26, and end of Ava. I've watched 25, 26. I'm dreading hitting play on this button for end of Ava when we do it tonight. It's fine. It's fine.
If I was going to have a beer with one, is it end of Ava? Like, should I separate that out on my rewatch? Should I watch that by itself tonight?
Yeah.
Well, no. You have to watch 25, 26 first.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Oh.
Like,
you mean...
I usually watch those in, like, the afternoon. Like, I eat some lunch, and then I'll sit down, and I'll watch those.
Yeah. They're such weird... We can't do this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, you should have fine. A beer... I'm going to tell you something, Patrick. You should have a beer with lunch and a beer with dinner. And then you should... That's...
Okay. Good to know.
I wrote... I have like summary notes, and I have deeper notes, but the summary notes are short this time for 25, 26.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of because of what those episodes are.
Right.
More than anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
It's gonna be good. It's gonna be a good discussion.
So that'll be this week. Also, I'm gonna plug my own shit. If you're in Indianapolis, if you're going to Gen Con, there's a Friends of the Table live show at Gen Con this week.
Nice.
And we just got 100 tickets added to the room. So if you were like, ah, shit, I'd love to see them, but, you know, I have a Gen Con ticket, but I don't have a ticket for the show. There are 100 more tickets available now. So
nice.
So you should go to the Gen Con site and take a look at that. Gen Con, it turns out, as like an organization, is very weird. Because it's been running for 50 years, which means it's very stuck in its ways. Yeah. It is like the opposite of PAX in that way. And so like it is, I will say, a little frustrating dealing with. I want to be clear. They didn't add more chairs to the room.
Uh-huh.
They added more tickets for the chairs that were already in the room. There are already more chairs in the room. Like we had 150 tickets or whatever. For reasons that are complicated. But really, there's way more chairs than that. So, anyway, if you want to come see Friends of the Table live, it'll be fun. It'll be a thing that's like, even if you've never seen me do that show or heard me, it will be a fun time, I promise. So, that's at Gen Con this week.
Seconded.
Thank you.
Fun time.
I appreciate it, Cotto. And I think that is going to do it for us. Patrick had to run and pick up a package or something. It's now just for you and me, Cotto.
Yeah. Hi. How's it
going? We should just do another 30 minutes about a Gundam mobile game.
Yeah, sure.
We should not do that.
Is that soon?
August. Late August, I want to say.
Sometime in August, yeah.
All right. So join us back in August when Cotto and I can talk more about Gundam. That's what I'm saying. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. We'll be back later this week with Ava. Oh, and a quick heads up note, which is like we're probably going to be a little light on pods this week and next week because Kato's taking a vacation.
Yeah.
Thank fucking God.
I'm resting.
Good.
One week.
Final 1 week of rest. That is all. No, Kato deserves so much more than that. But yes, Kato will be taking a break next week, which means you're going to probably do 2 pods next week. Maybe. We'll see.
I hope so.
I don't want to overpromise for either of these weeks is what I'm going to say.
These are going to be weird weeks.
They're going to be weird weeks, and that is okay. So look forward to End of Ava this Thursday, and look forward to whatever other podcasts we cobble together while Kato is gone, resting, recovering.
Playing Fire Emblem.
Playing Fire Emblem. Somewhere. Absolutely. All right. Until then, have a good week. Peace.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.
It's crucial.
That sounds crucial.
Trampolines respawn.
Infinite trampolines.
I'll save it.
Okay.
I do have a question because I didn't see most of the stream.
Should you save the question? You should save the question.
Should I? Okay.
If we're going to talk about it, you should save the question. Otherwise, there's a chance we'll stumble onto something good. Okay. And at that point, we should save it for the pod. Monday. Hey, Rob, what'd you get up to over the break?
Delayed at airports.
Delayed.
Yeah.
At airports. Sounds very sleepy. Which is fair.
I played a lot of Reiner Knizia board games.
Okay, good.
And I also played...
Swish, spelled it right on the first time.
Nice.
Minor Martin Wallace's Ankh-Morpork, which is kind of Discworld Waterdeep.
Okay.
And probably the best game I played was Mark Herman's Pericles.
Ooh. Oh, I saw that. I saw you playing that.
Yeah.
I'll, that's a fun one to throw to because I saw that image. Kato. What else besides that have you been playing?
Fire Emblem.
All right, Fire Emblem. Probably do a lot of Fire Emblem today.
Yeah. Finally got a win, Slay the Spire.
Nice job.
Win, quote unquote.
All right. 252? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh. Oh, yeah. I thought you were saying time.is. I was like, no, what? I'm not ready.
Yeah, we're going to clap at 2:52. yeah, go to time.is.
Rob, are they only showing up in your left headphone, or is that just me?
No, I'm getting both.
Weird.
I hope your headphones aren't busted.
No.
It just. Give me a second.
Oh, I gotta turn the fan down. Hold on.
Just unplug them.
All right.
Weird. Spotify comes in fine on both ends, but Discord just only wants to do it on the left. Whatever. I'll live.
Weird.
All right. It just, like, switched. I just heard it, like, pop. Like, it went, like,
bruit. That's so weird.
What?
Yeah, I don't know.
Discord is a good and functional app.
I mean, for the most part. Our lives are immeasurably better for the existence of Discord.
Yeah. It's on the fan Discord. If you type in exclamation point Discord, that's what it gives back.
What? Oh.
Just the phrase, yeah. Discord is a good and functional app in, like, the the weird, like...
Weird.
What's it called? There's a name for that text that, like, breaks the bounds of...
Right, right, right.
It's got all, like, a bunch of, like, glitchy stuff on it.
All right. Now we're ready to time that is?
Believe so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do... I said 13. That was way too close. Let's do 17 seconds. All right.
Nice. Sound like a good clap.
Mm-hmm.
Clap, clap, clap.
Yeah, like, the thing is, like, now basically it's on the floor. Like, I am certain that that Windows side setting where it's like, oh, microphone boost, I am certain that is back at 100. Yeah. And they've gotten rid of the menu where you can easily access that, and now I have no idea how to get there. Have you seen how they, like, fucked with this?
No, wait, so I haven't.
Is this separate from just the generic sound thing where you can go into the levels and, like, adjust the microphone level? This is something different than that? Or are you looking for that?
I'm looking for that in Windows, on the Windows side.
Okay, so you, so right-click the little
speaker icon. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you get sounds, so click on sounds.
I do not get that. I get open sound settings, open volume mixer.
Oh, you don't get sounds and troubleshoot sound problems?
No, I get open sound settings, and I get a new menu as opposed to the old sounds menu. When's the last time you updated?
It forces updates, so
yeah.
Well, maybe it would. So if you go even to the search bar and you just type sound, you can't. It won't pull up even in the search because it just did for me.
Let's see if I can.
Like, if you just search sound, the first one you'll get is the best match control panel.
I get sound settings.
Huh.
And it's got a new icon.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Okay. So I see which one you're looking at.
Right? Right?
Weird.
This is like a classic, oh, we made it simpler by eliminating a thing you used to be able to control.
How to get Old sound panel windows.
Ultimately, I would say that since you have gain control outside of those settings, just use that and like leave whatever default Windows is going to
okay.
do.
Okay. Open the run dialog menu.
What?
I'm dead serious.
Yeah, classic. This is fucking great.
Okay.
Rob, Kato, just put this in at
Absolutely.
Everyone at home, right, go to the run. Go open up the run dialog.
All right. MMSYS.
Okay.
.cpl. Try that.
Should I stop my recording and back this up before I do this?
No, that's fine. Okay. Don't worry about it.
It shouldn't screw with anything. Yeah.
Well, there it is.
Ta-da! So now you should be able to. Oh, no, well, I say should. You cannot pin that to your taskbar.
Oh,
so,
my fucking God.
Here's what I'll say, though, is that if it keeps fucking up, yeah, that's a thing, too. If it keeps fucking up, though, and it keeps boosting it back to 100%, maybe just leave it because it's always going to be a problem.
Please take
and
a screenshot,
Kato. Yeah, right. I will. Just use the gain on the Focusrite to deal with your levels.
What?
Patrick, is it the same happens. For you?
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah, Rob,
it's a good face.
Your webcam froze at just like a very
moment.
Good face.
I'm gonna.
I lost it.
But we got it. We got it screenshotted.
Yeah, I screenshotted
it. We screenshotted it. Just a moment of astonishment. Good. It's so good.
Can I drop that?
Oh, and now my webcam, is dead.
Good. Great.
Great. Let me just unplug that bad boy and plug it back in.
Enjoy that. I'm gonna drop that in there.
Through the miracle of USB. Don't you dare switch. Ah! Perfect.
It's so good.
Tremendous.
It's so good. I wish we'd been actually dropping some sort of larger, you know, I wish there was a true revelation. Are we good now?
Yeah.
You good?
All right.
We good. Yeah. Yeah. That's not what I meant to do. That's the wrong button.
Mm-hmm.
This one.
There we go. Boom. Uh-oh. Rob?
That's also a very good,
that's a good screenshot.
Take a screenshot that.
He looks like he's about to chew on that mic.
Chomp.
Just lost him. He's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Just gonna mark that.
Message. Yeah. Uh-huh. You got it.
Oops, that's not.
Rob. Hello. Oof. Fun.
Wait, what happened?
Hard lock.
Wow. Oh, here we go.
Hey.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's good. What concerns me is that is a return of that old problem I was having after I thought I'd fixed it.
Right.
So my PC just had a crash that I thought I'd solved like 3 months ago, and now it just recurred. And now it's recurring in a way that makes me think there might be something deeper wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, looks like I have the full WAV file. Awesome. So apologies for that. It's going to be 6 minutes before it's uploaded.
No worries.
Yeah, but like, I also don't want to keep everyone waiting here. Like, we had a good recording if you wanted to like record an outro, because...
All right,
my stuff's like 20 minutes. It's okay. up to you.
And we've already burnt a little bit here. Let's move on to the second half of the day. I'm happy with that. I would be down. Do you still want to hit Pericles at the end of the week? Maybe that way you can.
Yeah, like there's plenty for me to talk about. But I don't want to keep everyone on the hook while I upload this WAV file.
All right. I'm down with that. Can you give me Patrick? You can, y'all can go. I'll just do this here.
Okay.
Actually, wait. I should get. We should do a real outro. Never mind. I'm a liar.
Yeah. We're we can stick around and do the whole thing.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Let me just think. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I guess Rob doesn't have to do it.
Yeah. I can be. And Rob's computer crashed. So. Yeah,
Rob,
yeah.
So Rob, you can dip out. We'll the rest of us will take it out.
Awesome.
All right. See you guys.
Peace.
Bye.
All right. Are you recording?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I never stopped.
I didn't know. All right. So, I need a clean break. This is all end material.
Yeah.
This is all end matter.
Yeah.
No.
End matter. Uh-huh.
Sure.
Is that what it's called? What's that called?
Is that what they call it, Nava?
Yeah. Uh-huh. End matter is the parts of book that appear after the main portion of the body text, including the afterword, index, and bibliography.
Oh,
the back matter. Back matter back. is what I actually meant. But end matter is a synonym. A cinnamon.
Cinnamon.
A cinnamon.
Nice little cinnamon bun.
Yum.
You know, it's gross cinnamon gum. Yuck.
You don't like cinnamon gum? Like a red stripe?
Just cinnamon gum. I love cinnamon. Yeah, red stripe. Just get,
really?
It, get it out of my mouth.
No, that shit's good.
Oh, I miss gum. I haven't been able to have gum in like a year because of the tooth stuff I'm doing with crowns and stuff.
Shit.
So, can I have gum later or is it I'm done with gum?
No, you should be good once you have a crown in it.
Once I have the permanent crown.
Yeah.
Okay, which will be soon.
Nice.
I can't fucking wait. I fucking hate dentist shit so much. Yeah. It's so expensive and I hate it. Anyway.